like a dig. Stop. Right on. Oh,
what's going on? What's going on? What's going on? Yeah, what's going on?
From the campus of Winston-Salem State University, welcome to Future Focus Now, giving you great conversations with great guests from Winston-Salem State University and beyond. And now your host, WSSU Chancellor Elwood L. Robinson.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. Welcome to Future Focus Now. Thank you for joining us tonight with a very special, special program. I've been looking forward to this program for a while. We're going to have a conversation with one of the great basketball players of all time, former Winston-Salem State University basketball player, Hall of Famer, my favorite basketball player of all time. But we're going to get into some conversations with him about a variety of topics. This is someone who's done so much. So he's not just a basketball player. He's an author. He's a he makes documentaries. He's into music, you name it. This is a Renaissance man. And what has happened, he's actually had a school named after him. We get a chance to talk about that. But first up tonight on Future Focus Now, the legendary Earl the Pearl Monroe.
Well, nice to be with you. It's been a few weeks, so we were supposed to do this earlier, but I've been waiting for it, and I'm glad we're able to do it tonight.
I'm glad we were able to do this. There's so many people who have been waiting for this show. Earl, you're such an inspiration to so many people. We'll get into a variety of topics here. I want to explore some things that are happening to you. Thanks for agreeing to be on the show. First of all, man, how you doing? How are you?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. I mean, the weather's turned a little chilly, so that's good for me. And but overall, we're doing pretty good. A lot of things going on, and keeping busy is what it's all about.
I've been reading about you and all the things that you're doing. I don't know how you do all the things that you do. How do you keep up this amazing schedule? So many things you're involved in. We get a chance to talk about some of those during the course of the conversation tonight. But I want to begin this conversation with something that happened to you recently, and that's the naming of a school after you, Earl. I actually went on your website today. I also followed the school on Twitter. I know the school recently opened. It's a charter school that was named in your honor, the Earl Monroe New Renaissance Basketball School. Tell me a little bit about the opening, and I'm interested in following how you got to thinking about starting a school and then opening up the school, what that means to you. Take us through that thought process.
Well, first of all, it's an honor to actually have a school named after me. You know, one of the things I thought about when you start naming things after people, generally they're dead.
That's right.
So I was trying to wait to the day that it opened so that I could know that I was still here. But we actually started this process about 8 years ago. Dan Clores, who is the founder of the school, came to me one day and he said that he wanted to open this school that will be basically a school that was a basketball school, but not for playing the game of basketball. And it kind of hit home with me because back in the 80s, I had a camp in the summertime and it was called the Earl Monroe. It wasn't called the basketball camp. It was called Earl Monroe Academy. And what I did was I had kids who had a certain grade point average. They were able to come to the camp during the summertime. And what I did was I brought in people who were in the media, people who were coaches, doctors, trainers, and all those people who were about the sport but weren't sports people. And so when he talked about this particular thing, I say, well, you know, this is the same thing I was thinking about back in the 80s, but obviously this is so much bigger than what I was talking about. So I decided to jump on board. And Dan is a guy, and some people might down there might remember, he came down when we produced the Black Magic film. And so, you know, this was something that was on his mind for a long time. It's been on my mind. And collectively, we put this thing together. We actually opened up on August 30th. And so the school has been going, you know, for almost, two or three weeks now. We actually have our grand opening tomorrow morning. On this October 6th here, and that's going to be exciting as well. We're going to have the commissioner of basketball, NBA basketball. He's going to be there to cut the ribbon for us, and it's going to be a real nice affair. This is something that's, you know, I think is really going to be very good for kids who are not players, but who want some type of involvement in the game of basketball. And the other thing in a nutshell is that this is not just for basketball. This is to get a basic education and a lot of things that they might want to go in when they graduate from the school.
It's pretty special. And I, knowing that the grand opening is tomorrow morning, I feel even more special that you would take time tonight to be on Future Focus Now. So I want to thank you for that. But I told you, I went to your website, and I'm going to put it up on my Facebook page later on. But this is what it says about the school. It's the first specialized public high school with an academic curriculum entirely designed around basketball and the many career paths associated with this global game. And basketball has expanded. It is a global game, but there's so many pathways. And you have an amazing chart. I looked at this chart, and it's about 20 different pathways that students can get involved in basketball. Talk a little bit about that and how you structured it.
Well, you know, we have a lot of educators on our board. So, you know, this is a situation where as we've had those educators who've been involved in charter schools before, and they've come together to put together this unbelievable curriculum. And of course, you know, we're part of the New York State, and we have to go according to what New York State dictates for kids to go through. So we have that curriculum, as well as these are things that they could also major in. So it's been a heck of an experience. First of all, you know, the time that we've had to put it together, we're out in a school now that we're just there renting the school itself. We put about $500,000 into it, and we'll be there for 3 or 4 years. We're having our own school built in the South Bronx, in the Mount Haven section, which is probably one of the third, I guess when you talk about poverty in the city, it's the third, it ranks number three. So it's going to be done. It's a 60,000 square foot new building. That's going to be exciting when it's done, probably in 2024 or so. But everything that you could think of that a kid might want, that's what we're trying to provide. We've got two full-time teachers in each classroom, which we're actually, you know, thinking about now. And we've got a mentor for each child, a college and career counselor, and our classrooms are no more than 18 or 20 kids. So we're using basketball, you know, not for the sport of basketball, but for a true learning tool for teaching, inspiring, embracing self-confidence and motivation. And hopefully this will not only change these kids' direction in terms of what their lives are going to be, but also their parents and the community.
Oh, I love that. I mean, I love thinking about that holistic approach, or you're thinking about the families, you're thinking about the community, providing opportunities for these students. I hope some of these students would have come to Winston-Salem State University. I looked at some of the pathways, advertising, marketing, you name it, they can get involved in that. So that's incredible. So here you are now, having this name, school named after you. You got the grand opening tomorrow morning. You got the commissioner coming. I mean, how ironic. Do you think back, Winston-Salem State University, you come here, you're certainly a basketball star and legend and all that, but also a degree in education. So what does that mean to you, the fact that your college degree is in education and now you have this school? Talk a little bit about that.
One of the things that I'm most proud of is the fact that I do have a degree, and I did it in 4 years. I was talking to someone today about student teaching in High Point. And I remember my instructor there was a teacher by the name of Miss Blue. And, you know, we talked about a lot of things that are happening actually now in terms of where education was going to go. I mean, you know, and she had a great insight as to, you know, what education would be about in the future. This is, you know, so important to me that, you know, I can provide a situation for kids to not only grow, but help other people to grow. I mean, when I talk to these kids tomorrow, it's about, you know, they're the face of this. You know, this is Earl Monroe School, but they're the face of this school. And they're the ones who are, what they do in this school for as the first, you know, class, what they do is going to, you know, be important for the people behind them. And to think about that, so that what you try and do here is be as successful as you can. I mean, we're providing, like, you know, one-on-one counseling with, you know, with our mentors in the private sectors for each kid. I mean, we're giving them the opportunity, and we're marrying passion with opportunity. And hopefully that, you know, will inspire, you know, these kids, both boys and girls, because girls like sports too.
That's right.
To you know, enhance their futures.
Yeah. Look, I can see the excitement. I can feel the excitement. I wish I was there tomorrow morning with the ribbon cutting and everything. I know it's going to be wonderful. Let me take you back. The first time I think that we met and we were having breakfast, and I think I shared this with you. Before I came to Winston-Salem State University, I worked at Cambridge College. And Cambridge College was started by, the founder was Eileen Brown. And I was having dinner with Eileen, and she tells a story about you. Do you remember Eileen Brown? She said that she was your teacher,
who she was a student teacher actually in high school, and she started the, you know, whatever she did in our class, but she started the talent shows at Bartram High School in Philadelphia, which that was where Patti LaBelle started singing, and Patti LaBelle was in my homeroom class. So Eileen Brown has been a part of my life for so long, and I just talked to her son just recently. They're in Connecticut now.
Now, so that was great. I mean, I just find that amazing that we would have that connection. She was a founder of Cambridge College. When I was there as provost, I had a chance to meet her and talk with her, and she shared with me. And when she found out I was coming to Winston-Salem State University, and she said, You know, Earl Monroe, you know, I helped him with his application. And I said, really? I said, when I see Earl, I'm going to ask. I'm gonna see if this is a true story. But
no, when I went to school, well, you know, you probably don't know. When I went to Winston-Salem, I thought I was coming down on this big scholarship or whatever the case may be. And I said, well, if I'm going down here, I got to have my man Smitty come down with me.
Right.
So they called and Leon Whitney said, I think I could make that happen. So Smitty and I, we get on the train, we come down to Winston, and we're there before everybody else, obviously. We're there with the football team, and we stay at the gym in the basement. So we don't realize that we don't have scholarships. we got to make we got to show that we can make the team. So about 2 weeks that we're there, you know, they said, okay, we're going to send you, you know, to now you can take your SATs. So then we took SATs, and that's how we were able to get into the school. And we weren't actually on scholarship. We were on working scholarship. So we had to pay our first semester and so forth. But second semester, I figured, hey, I played pretty well this first semester. I'm not going to pay. That was my entry into Winston-Salem.
Well, you know, that was interesting meeting her and sharing the stories with her about you and how it was when I was growing up. So let's talk a little bit about your Winston-Salem State University experience. You are certainly from Philadelphia. You're from the north. You're coming south. So here you are, you take the train down and you get off the train and here you are in the South. What was it like for you to find yourself in that position?
Well, it was the first time that I had been South. I have gone as far south as Washington, D.C. on a class trip one time. And I had been in Baltimore once or twice because we have a lot of family there. But on the train ride down, and Smitty had been down, you know, down south before. So we, you know, we're looking out and we're seeing cotton fields and so forth and so on. This is my first experience of seeing any of this. And it was a wide awakening, so to speak. Getting down there, and when we got to Winston-Salem, you know, there was nobody there waiting for us. We got there about 5 or 6 in the morning, and we didn't know where to go. We didn't know, Coach Gaines had never seen us or talked to us or anything. We were just going to school, and so eventually Coach Gaines showed up. And we looked down at the end of the platform because we had was nowhere for us to go, so we stayed right there on the platform. And we saw this little head all of a sudden start to walk toward us, and the steam coming up from the tracks and whatnot. And that head got bigger and bigger and bigger. And so we finally got there. We were kind of looking up at this big man, and it was Coach Gaines. You know, like I said, he took us to the gym, and you know, he's kind of told us a little bit about Winston-Salem, but most of it, you know, we had to kind of learn for ourselves. Certainly, the guys who were on the football team, they took a liking to us, and you know, took us around and so forth, and that was very important because by the time the rest of the students came in, We were already established, so to speak. You know, we were cool with the football team. That means nobody messed with us.
Right. So usually, Earl, when you go to college, that first year is sometimes the toughest year, and particularly for someone who was a northerner, you're coming south, you're getting acclimated to the culture. That first year for you, I mean, when did it soak in that, you know, this is the place for me, or did it in that first year?
Well, you know, I was there to play basketball. You know, I had school was another thought. Sure. And, you know, but as I got acclimated to school, you know, obviously I had done pretty well in school before when I was in, you know, high school, and I went to Temple Prep before going. And so, you know, I got used to the routine and things of that nature. And Smitty, whose name is Saheed now, right? We got, you know, we stayed close to each other And, you know, we did most of the things, you know, our things together. The basketball team was a real resource for us. Teddy Blunt and the guys that were on the basketball team, because Teddy was from Philadelphia as well. So we had a good entree into what was going to be happening for us during that year. Classes were cool. Did pretty well in classes, except for biology. That was a tough class for us, and that made us also go to summer school. But yeah, you know, as any situation, when it's new, you get acclimated to it, and you find out if, in fact, this is for you.
Great.
I thought it was for me, and then, you know, of course, when it goes back to basketball, I was playing, and I wasn't playing enough, I didn't think. And so after the season was over, I went to Coach Gaines, and I said, hey, I think I'm on transfer because I didn't, you know, I play for a little bit, you take me out, you get down, you put me in the game, I shoot, you get up again, you take me out. So, you know, I didn't understand that he didn't like to play freshman. Okay. So I said, I'm going to transfer. So he said, well, listen, wait outside the office for a second or so. So I did that. And when he called me back in and said, somebody on the phone. So my mother. So he had called my mother in the meantime, and my mother told me in no uncertain words, you better stay there, boy. And that was it. And you know, obviously my last 3 years were like unbelievable. I mean, I just talked to guys all the time. I talked to my teammates, you know, guys who were played after I did. I talked to three of them today, as a matter of fact. Wow. So, you know, lifelong friendships and relationships that I would never have had if I hadn't gone to Winston-Salem. The nurturing and the type of things that we did there and how we pulled together and meshed. It's something that I tell kids today. You know, is the reason why I'm who I am and however I am today is because of my experience at Winston-Salem State.
Well said, and thank you for that. We'll appreciate that. One of the things I've learned from you and having a chance to meet you and get to know you and talk a little bit about your philosophy is that you are so team oriented. I've had conversations with you, and I've tried to get you to talk about yourself in some glowing ways, and you always come back to my teammates and my teammates and my teammates. And for me, that's quite unusual for a mega superstar like yourself. Talk a little bit about that, and why is that important?
Well, you know, for me, you know, I was with guys and we lived together. You know, we did everything together for, you know, 4 years. I mean, you know, for the most part, most of the guys that I was with, and, you know, and guys who came in took up the same, you know, mantle, you know, and that was how close we were as a team. And I just thought it was always important to be inclusive. And, you know, I've had the opportunity, you know, after, you know, Winston-Salem to go on to do a lot of different things and whatnot. And I've always wanted my guys to experience those things. They are part of it because they were the ones who sacrificed for me to get to where I was. And so that's always been my thinking. And, you know, as we speak, I'm still trying to get our movie together called The Magic of the Rams.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
I'm still, you know, and what it is, it tells a story about us as a team, you know, people, guys from different parts of the country coming together and to form this team. And I always say it's us against the world, you know, because I remember when Winston-Salem students turned on us when we lost the game. But, you know, still trying to get that off the ground. And then I think I will soon. You know, that's a part of me. It's in my heart. And these guys are always in my heart. I always think about them, talk about them. And, you know, again, another reason why I'm who I am is because of who they were.
Yeah, that's so special. And I appreciate that sentiment so much. I'm always curious as to, you know, elite mega athletes like yourself, Earl. At what point were you playing? I know your sophomore year, you really things kind of took off. When you looked around, not necessarily just your teammates, but people you played against, when you realized that I'm really much better than these guys, did that ever happen to you?
Yes, it did. As a matter of fact, you know, I realized my skills early, and it wasn't, you know, it was for playing in Philadelphia, going to New York to play, and realizing what I could do against and how I could excite people. I realized all that early. You know, sometimes I played to the fans, sometimes I didn't. You know, a lot of people didn't like us because we used to go around, we used to tell people we're gonna beat them, and we spit on the floor, we tell, you know, they would, we go to their cafeterias and we spit out the food. No, we were nasty guys. I mean, when you think in terms of that's a team, you know, but that's the way, that was our thing. And that's why we had this saying when we were in the huddles, that we would say our prayers and we would put our hands in and say our prayers. And then we would say, kill, kill, kill. And that was us. That was what we felt like we were supposed to be doing. And fortunately, you know, we did that. Nobody did it to us.
But what's amazing, Earl, where was the team aware of what was happening in terms of the energy surrounding the team, how it was being seen across the country? But certainly statewide, it just took off. And, you know, people would rent buses and stuff to come see you play. And I can't think of anything comparable to this other than the Bulls, you know, with Jordan. And when they would go everywhere, people would be so amazed. I can imagine in the 60s, that was comparable to that. How did you guys handle that? And were you aware of it?
I think we were aware of it as it manifests itself. You know, I guess the fact that we had a lady by the name of Mary Garber, who was a writer for the paper there, the journal. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, women weren't sports writers back in those days, you know, when you think about it. And for us, you know, they put her with a black school so that she could, you know, write sports for this black school. All of a sudden, this black school is starting to take off. And she's at the helm of writing about all the things. And it went not only statewide, it went nationally. So it helped us out, you know, with her doing it. And then, of course, we also had another lady there by the name of Claudette Weston. Who helped to put our you know, games in the Coliseum. And now it wasn't just the Winston-Salem people that were, you know, Winston-Salem State people that were going. It was, you know, everybody was going. And it was like the first time, like, really blacks and whites came together to see a black school, to cheer and all of a sudden the camaraderie of blacks and whites. I think I got an award just a couple of years ago there in Winston-Salem, I think called the Annie, right?
Yep, that's right.
And I think, as a matter of fact, I'll be down there next week because Claudette is getting the Annie. That's but right. That is because of the, you know, our school really coming together and easing the racial tensions during that time. And, you know, yes, we realized what we were doing, you know, and what the significance of what we were doing, but, you know, we still had to win games.
Right.
And that camaraderie that we had was so strong, it was like undeniable.
Yeah. So you win the national championship, right? And that's special. I have, believe it or not, in my office now, I still have the Hall of Fame thing in my office for you guys. So what was that like in terms of the championship, winning that, getting on a roll to be able to do that? And, you know, you see the clips all the time with you kind of, you know, running out the clock at the end. Talk a little bit about that championship experience.
Oh, it was unbelievable. I mean, it's something that I could probably look at. You know, unfortunately, you know, they didn't have a whole game of I remember that, you know, there was an announcer that was announcing the game, and during the game he says, "Well, I know this game is going to be great, but I got a flight to catch."
During the game?
You know, and he left, you know. But, you know, it was just mind-boggling. I've always been kind of nonchalant about most of the things that I've done or experienced and whatnot, even though inside of me, I might be burning up, you know. But on the outside, I really try not to show it so much. And I remember when Sahib and so Smitty and I, we were co-captains, we went out to get the trophy and whatnot, and he went to give it to me, and I said, and I, you know, like, no, you take it, ain't it? You know, ain't no big thing. You know, that was all ego. You know, that was all ego. But, you know, I relished the fact that, you know, we were able to do what we did. And even, you know, to the day, I mean, you know, it's been so long, man. Yeah. You know, my guy, I always call him my guy. No. You know, we're still there. You know, we're still there. It's just like we were, you know, then. And that's the most relishing thing, you know, about it, about that whole championship. Now, they went back after the championship, and I wasn't able to go back with them for the celebration, getting off the plane and all that. So I had to take my student, National Teachers Examination the next morning. So I had to stay in Evansville, wherever we were, and take my National Teachers Examination that morning. And Coach Yanes' dad stayed with me while I took that, and then I came back later on.
I mean, that is an incredible story. I read that not too long ago, but that's incredible. You stayed to take your national teacher's exam. That's special. And you guys have been so important to the legacy and the history of Winston-Salem State University athletics. You know, you win the championship. I learned this through Coach Cleo Hill and A.D. Thomas that in 2020, when the team was playing for the CIAA championship, that you called and you talked to the team. I had to find that out through them, but it shows that you continue to be a part of this university family. You continue to think about the athletes, the student athletes, and they won the championship. So, Earl, I need to know what you told them.
You know, just the regular, you know, the regular things, but you tell them that, you know, for whatever happens today, you know, they've got, you know, a lot of people behind them, and they were special. And if in fact they weren't going to win, it wouldn't be a disaster, but I knew they were going to win, and that was going to be the great thing about it all. And, you know, to have the faith to know that you could go out and you could do this. I mean, when you look at that game, there's no real reason why they should have won that game, except for the fact that fate had played its part in it. And, you know, they came off and did the right thing.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, and you have to always continue to believe. And I think that's part of a winning equation to be able to do that. So I want to thank you for taking the time to speak with them. It meant a lot to the team. It meant a lot to the coach. And so the coaching staff, so we appreciate that. Knowing that you are part of the WSSU family means so much to us. Take you through a couple of things in terms of the time that we have left. You get drafted into the NBA, right? You're the number two pick in the NBA, right? What was it like being drafted in 1967 into the NBA?
I didn't really feel, you know, I felt special about it, but at the same time, I kind of expected it. I didn't know, you know, who was going to draft me. But I did know, because I had I was in Philadelphia, and the Baltimore Bullets brass came by my house. Now, I had been out. For some reason, I was out around 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. But they came past my house, and I came in, and we had a grocery store, and we lived in back of the grocery store and on the top three floors. And I'm wondering why the lights were still on in the back of the grocery, you know, in our what we call our dining room, per se. And so I walk in, and there one of the owners, the general manager, so forth, and they're telling me they were going to draft me. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to take me to New York. Well, I said, okay. So I was, whatever the clothes I was in, they just took me. So we went up to New York, stayed at, got in a hotel. And when they went to make the announcement, you know, I came down. Now, I had to, the pictures of me, I have a plaid coat, right? I had to borrow the general manager's coat for the press conference, because I just came just the way I was. And I had to hold my shoulders up because the coat was too short. And it was all the way up my sleeve. So I had to hold my shoulders up so my hands looked like they were the right size. And, you know, when they announced it, it was all good. I remember they took me into the room and I signed a contract. They gave me a contract. And I signed it. And when Coach Gaines came, yeah, he said, "Boy, what have you done?" And I said, "I thought this was something that you had." Well, it wasn't. So I said, okay, to me, that was a mistake that I made, and I'll make up for it, but I'm going to live by the mistake. And, you know, that's kind of indicative of how I am anyway. Yeah. So I went and I remember them asking me about my contract that I signed. And I said, it was substantial. Knowing in my mind it wasn't, but I said it was substantial. And so the next time that I was assigned a contract, after my rookie year, I remember the coach taking me for a ride, Gene Shue taking me for a ride, and said, "You know what, Earl? You know, the owners think that they realize that, you know, you really needed to have a better contract. And they're going to rip up that contract and give you a 3-year contract. Or you have ripped that $20,000 contract. They're going to give you a 3-year contract for 25, 30, and 35. I said, "Whoa." You know, but I want to just play for what I got, because, you know, I signed the contract, and that's the way I'm, you know, I want to live up to that contract. Yeah. And so that's what I did. And then the next time, you know, when the contract came up the next year, I signed for like almost $200,000. Mm-hmm. So it was like, okay, you know, you got me early on, but you're not going to get me again.
Yeah. And you go to the NBA, and you know, much like the question that I asked you about when you were at Winston-Salem State and you started playing, you're in the NBA, and you take the NBA by storm. I mean, you're rookie of the year, and here this is you know, supposed to be the elite, the best of the best. At what point did you realize when you got to the NBA that, look, this I can do this as well?
Well, you know, I'm from Philadelphia, and I played against, you know, most of the guys that were 76ers. They bring guys from New York. I played against. So I knew pretty much what I could do. And it was a guy named Ben Worley that was playing in the Baker. We played in Baker League. That was like a pro league. And he came and he told me, Earl, I'm going to give you one bit of advice down in Baltimore. He said, don't take the ball out of bounds. Okay, because you never see it again. So during the exhibition season, we played and the ball came, went through the basket and just bounced. And it kept bounce, low enough. Everybody was standing around the ball. Nobody wanted to take it out. So so I learned something early on with that. But, you know, hey, when we played, you know, we got to think of the CIAA back in those days. I mean, all the best black ball players were playing in the, you know, they had players that were playing in the white universities and whatnot. But most of your best ball players are playing in the CIAA. I played against those guys. I averaged 40 points against those guys. Yeah. So I got a lot of confidence going in. And at the beginning of the season, you know, I didn't start because they had the starting lineup was a guy named Don Ohl and Kevin Lockery. Mm-hmm. And so Don Ohl, they were looking to trade Don Ohl after they actually saw that I could really play.
Right.
And they once they traded Don Ohl, then I went on a tear. Right. And I guess it's culminated when I think I scored like
56. You got to take me through this now. You got to take me through this one. Now you're a rookie. Now was this in Los Angeles?
No, this was in Baltimore.
Baltimore. So you in, but the Lakers. You're playing the Lakers, right? And then you're talking about Jerry West. You got all these great players. Now you go for 56. You got to take me through that night.
Well, I should preface this by saying that they won the game. However, you know, before the game, you know, Jerry West is trying to be nice to me, I guess, and whatnot, and he kept calling me Ben. Ben. You know, and I kept saying, oh, Ben. And then I remember there was a guy named Ben Monroe who played at New Mexico, and he probably thought I was Ben Monroe. So we played and played. You know, he would say, good shot, Ben, or whatever case. So by the end of the game, though, you know, he came up to me and shook my hand and said, good game, Earl.
Mm. Yep.
So I said, well, okay, I guess this means I'm in the NBA.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know who I am.
That's a great story. That's a really, really great story. Great career, Hall of Famer, you know, Wes Unseld, you know, you play with him. I mean, you have a great run. And during that run, significant battles with New York and the New York Knickerbockers, right? I mean, it's a big rivalry. How did you end up from Baltimore to New York, and what was that like?
had, you know, drag out, knockout, you know, kind of games against New York. And, you know, and I had a kind of a knockdown, drag out thing with Frazier simply because we were rookies together. I was number two pick. I think he was number five pick. Red Holzman had come down to Winston-Salem to scout me because he was a scout during those times. And then he became coach afterwards. And so it goes all the way back to when I was in high school. When I was in high school, there was a guy on my team who went to Southern Illinois to college. So, you know, that means that you're on their radar. If somebody else might be good enough in, you know, on a team from his school. So, but after my senior year, I led the city in scoring, and I get this here note that Southern Illinois don't want me because I can't handle the ball well enough. Oh. Now, you know, anybody who knows me knows I can handle the ball.
Right.
So Clyde was there at that time, you know, at Southern Illinois. So, you know, that would have meant if I would have gone there, we would have played together. So, and then in my senior year, we won the national title. Southern Illinois wins the NIT here in New York. So, you know, there's all this kind of thing back and forth, you know, so that when we get into the NBA, we got battles, you know. And by the time when West came in, and then we went from last place to first place, and then New York beats us four games in a row, so forth in the playoffs and things of that nature. So there's always this thing about New York. We hated them. I hated them.
Right.
And so after my third year, my agent says, okay, well, let's, you know, we're going to negotiate a contract. You know, we got a contract coming up and whatnot. So let's put some pressure on them. So he suggests that I give them three places that I want to play that they could trade me to, and if they don't want to pay me. So I gave them Philadelphia, which is home. I gave them L.A., and I gave them Chicago. I'm on big cities, you know, so that I could. And so as the season started, they traded for Archie Clark, and now they're saying that they got the best backcourt in the league with Archie Clark and me. So that means they're not going to trade me. They're not giving me any more money, or not the money that I wanted anyway.
Right.
So in the fourth game, we were actually playing against New York. He told me to just stay home. And I stopped playing for the Bullets. And I forced them to trade me. So I gave them those three places to trade me to. No, they wouldn't do that. They wanted to trade me to New York. So when I went to Indiana in the ABA, I thought maybe I should go there. And they wanted to sign me. And when we were leaving from the game, I went to a game. When we were leaving from the game, I saw the guys, the black guys, reaching up over the top of their locker, and they were pulling out guns. And I said, well, what's happening? He said, well, you know, this is, you know, Ku Klux Klan, right? You know, we all just protect ourselves, you know, just in case. I said, so, you know, we didn't have cell phones back then. So I went to a pay phone in the stadium, and I called Larry Fleischer, who was my agent. I said, Larry, I don't think this is the place for me.
This is not the place for me.
So he said, well, listen up. I've got a deal on the table with New York. I said, no, I'm not going to New York. He said, well, think about it. And I said, I will. And so I took a flight out the next day. I didn't sign the contract there, obviously. Took a flight out the next day, went to Philadelphia now. And you know, media, everybody still try to find where I am and so forth and so on. And I got to talk with a good friend of mine named Sonny Hill, who was like a mentor of mine in Philadelphia. And my conclusion was this: hey, I'm a basketball player. I can play under any circumstance. Plus, I'm from Philly. That means I can play under any circumstances. And if it's New York, so be it. So I took a car back to the hotel. I was riding good. I had my Rolls Royce. So I was riding real good. So after about a couple of days of just kind of thinking about it, talking to my mom, and whatnot, I drove to New York and signed a contract.
Man, was in your mind, Earl, was that once you teamed with Clyde, I mean, the two of you were so classy, you were so stylish in and of itself. Was that the best backcourt of all time?
Well, I like to think that. I mean, you know, obviously when I went there, I was giving up my own team, you know, and Kevin Lockery said it pretty eloquently later on. You know, Earl, you've got your own team. You shouldn't leave your own team. Clyde's got his team. You got your own team. But I went to Clyde's team, which meant my career, everything had to kind of take a back seat. You know, I've always been a scorer. So, you know, I always equate a lot of things to scoring. And the fact that, you know, I left Baltimore with like a 23, 24 point average. And the next year, I'm scoring 11 points, you know, a game. Didn't sit well with me. And I went to Philadelphia during the summertime, and my guys in Philly told me to go back to New York. But eventually, you know, we worked it out. You know, obviously, it was a different type of team. It already had its stars with DeBuscher and Willis Reed and Bradley, Dick Barnett, and so forth and so on. I decided, hey, Earl, you just pick your time, find your slot. And I told Red Holzer when I went, I don't even want to start. You know, Dick Barnett's your starter. You know, I don't want to start. You know,
yeah.
I work my, you know, I earn my way in. And that's what I did.
But if you know, if you look at that team to me was a precursor to space and pass basketball today. I mean, in full disclosure, Earl, I was a huge Boston Celtics fan. My father was a Boston Celtics fan. I grew up, so during that era, you know, I'm a Celtics fan, but that 73 team was a special, special team. Particularly with the ball movement, we've not seen that before.
Yeah, and plus we had so many good shooters. I mean, we, you know, outside shooters. We, you know, when you think about, you know, DeBuscher shooting so long in the corner, Bradley shooting from way outside, and not only them, but Jerry Lucas was a bomber from there. We had, you know, when you look at it, we had six Hall of Famers that were playing on that team, and. You know, yeah, the ball moved and it hit guys. And the good thing about it, you know, Clyde and I, was that the ball could move. If it breaks down, we could take guys one-on-one. So, you know, we had great movement. It was a smart team. Yeah. I mean, you know, aside from the guys being able to, you know, play, I mean, myself, Clyde, you know, so far we had two Rhodes Scholars on the team with Bradley and Lucas. And, you know, so you know we were a pretty smart team. Dick Barnett was a smart guy. I mean, Dr. Dick, as he's called. He since he's got his doctorate, he doesn't really want to be called anything else at this time. So you know, we had a great team, which was kind of precursive for, you know, these teams now, you know, not only the fact of being able to move the ball, but also the fact that we had superstars. We had more than one superstar or more than two superstars on the team. We had three or four superstars on that team that meshed their games together, you know, to be a team. And guys could have been on other teams and obviously could have, you know, had much better careers.
Yeah, you know, they talk today about the big three, right? Now, you guys had like the big five or the big six, and you're absolutely right. Look, there are so many things that I could talk to you about, Earl, and we're up against the time, but I can't leave this conversation without getting your perspective on, you know, you certainly one of the 50 greatest players of all time. They did that to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the NBA. This year, they're going to celebrate the 75th anniversary. I want to get your take, and you know, let's go back and forth on this. People said, should we add 25 to the 50, or should we reshuffle the deck and just add 75? Any thoughts on that?
Well, I want to tell you, I voted. You know, I was one of the voters, and I just added. You know, I couldn't vote for myself anyway, so I just added on top of the other ones. You know, obviously it's got to be a change. I mean, in terms of, you know, as many guys that were, you know, some guys won't be on it. I might not be on it, but it doesn't even matter.
No, that won't happen, but go ahead. You
know, because I've always understood my place in the game. And when I look out at the game and how it's being played today, that's the game I brought into the league. You know, that's, you know, one-on-one, the showtime and so forth and so on. It's what they play. That's the tribute to me that I see every day. And I you know, in other words, I don't even really care. Yeah. Whatever the case may be, I don't know myself what the deal is.
I care. We care. Everybody cares. Look, we will start a riot if you are not in the top 75. I'll tell you that. That's going to happen, my friend. Don't worry about that one.
Make sure you're in riot gear.
Look, every year on my Facebook, I will post, I will ask the question, you know, the top 10, you know, greatest players of all time. And I'll ask people who, you know, who they think is the GOAT. And I'll tell you invariably every year, you get a lot of votes, my friend, for being the greatest of all time. And I want you to know that. So we're not worried about the top 75.
Well, I appreciate it, you know, but, you know, like I said, you know, if I had stayed in Baltimore and had done whatever I would continue to do in Baltimore, I would be no doubt. But coming to New York, you know, everything kind of, you know, I'm looked at more as a guy who gave up his game to be a part of a winning situation. That's basically, you know, what it boils down to. Hey, you know, it's all good, man. I had a great life.
You have, and you're a legend. Take us out. Tell us, what are you doing now? What are you working on? What projects do you have going right now?
I don't have any projects. I know this school, you know, we're trying to, you know, we have to raise a certain amount of money to make sure that the school is going to be self-sufficient. We're doing, you know, our part with that. You know, like I said, I'm still doing this thing with the Magic of the Rams. That's going to come off and whatnot. A documentary is getting ready to be done. Well, I don't know I have to sign off on it for it to be done, but it's a documentary about me that Rip Hamilton used to play with Detroit and his company. They sent me some papers to do. I don't know if we're doing it or not, but it might work out. And other than that, I mean, you know, just for a guy my age, I mean, it's not much I can do. I can't get out. My wife won't let me get out and run the streets no more. So, yeah. So there you are, man.
No, Absolutely. I have enjoyed this conversation. Thank you for taking time to be on Future Focus Now. I wish you well tomorrow with the opening of the school. It's going to be extraordinary, no doubt. And as soon as I can, I got to get up to the school. And as soon as we can, we got to partner with you here at Winston-Salem State University to make sure we can get some of those schools and turn them into Rams.
You know, they're going to be very well schooled. And, you know, being a Ram is going to be a big part of what their whole future will be. So hopefully some of those kids will be able to be a Ram, because, you know, if I'm a glowing example of it, we need a few more of us.
Absolutely. And you take care, Earl. Thanks for being on the show. Everybody, join us again next week for another edition of Future Focus Now. Hope you enjoyed the conversation with the legendary Hall of Fame, one of the greatest of all time, one of the top 75 greatest NBA players of all time. I'm calling it. I'm naming it. Thank you for joining us. Good night, everybody. Good night, Earl. Thank you.